It's time to change the situation if Tottenham wants to change.
It's in the past, it's in the past. Then we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we play the Tottenham way.
And still Ricky Villa! What a fantastic run! He scored!
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Tottenham Way podcast and the first for a little while. We are in the midst of a roasting summer. I always feel that, you know, June and July, in the old days, we spoke about cricket and golf and you parked football to one side, but you can't do that anymore, particularly when you're a Tottenham Hotspur supporter and plenty is going on. And there is a chance that the new man in charge, Mr. Frank, will be speaking frankly to the club at some stage in the next hour or two as we record this. And if necessary, we will reconvene and make sense of what the new man in charge has had to say. I'm Marcus Buckland, delighted to have Tom Allnutt of The Times and Tom Barkley of The Sun alongside me. Guys, it feels like a little while since we chatted. Obviously, a lot has happened in the meantime. Ange has come and gone. We have a new manager. I personally, I'm very excited. We have a new chief executive who has persuaded Daniel Levy to say all sorts of remarkable things. I mean, it's easy to say them. Of course, we'll see what happens. But it's the start, perhaps, of an exciting new era. Tom, first things first. I mean, we've sort of gone to extremes in discussing Ange and whether he should have gone, et cetera, Have Spurs made a sound appointment, irrespective of whether they should have changed the manager?
Hi, Marcus. I mean, this is where you normally sort of say we've let the dust settle and we're giving some perspective, and but actually we just haven't got round to kind of being in the right place at the right time to do a podcast. I mean, I personally think it's a really good appointment. You know, I think there were some interesting candidates, obviously, and we spoke about those. But I think Frank ticks so many of the Tottenham boxes. You know, I think he wouldn't necessarily tick all the boxes for all the sort of bigger clubs in the Premier League. But I think if you look at kind of the main things that Spurs look for in a coach, I think he offers, you know, so much. And I can very much see why, if you sat down, you know, with all the technical staff and pored over the data and went through all the kind of objectives, that you would always come out with Frank, because he's such an all-round candidate. You know, if you look at the record at Brentford, you look at his history of developing young players, of improving players full stop, not just young ones, working clearly on a very tight budget at Brentford in terms of wages, in terms of transfer fees, being just an all-round good bloke. You know, we heard Daniel Levy talk about him being a superhuman being, you know, this kind of thing where I think Spurs in general will be very happy to have him around the training ground, around the building. He'll be a really good ambassador and communicator for the club. And I think sometimes, if anything, that sort of personality of Frank, where people, you know, we know that he's this kind of lovable Danish uncle, you know, who everyone would sort of, you know, love to hang out with and have a beer with. But I think sometimes that clouds the kind of skill of the coach as well, you know, in terms of his tactical nous, his flexibility, which we've talked about, I think, before. And apart from anything else, his record at Brentford, you know, I mean, maybe we don't talk about that enough. You know, the number of finishes with Brentford he's had in the Premier League, where basically they haven't been involved in a relegation fight, you know, and this is a club that really should have been kind of scrapping to just about survive ever since they got up into the top flight. But actually, we've just kind of come to expect them as an established Premier League club. And that is, okay, you know, it's not kind of fireworks and trophies, but actually that is a really impressive record, you know. And I think this is, you know, I know that the Ange decision was hotly debated by us, you know, as much as anyone else. But I think this is the start of a new chapter for Tottenham. Another one, of course. But I think it's one that fans generally can be pretty excited about, I have to say.
Yeah. And I just wonder, Tom B, that likability factor that Thomas Frank brings, how important do you think that might prove to be? Because as Tom just alluded to, we know a lot of supporters were very unhappy in the end to see Ange go. A lot of the players were making it pretty clear, most notably Romero, that they were very sorry to see Ange go. And I know you get that. And Harry Redknapp was, I thought, spot on when he says, you know, if you love the manager that much, you should have played better for him. New guy comes in, the king is dead, long live the king. Do you think it'll be that much easier because of the shape of Thomas Frank's personality?
Yeah, I presume so. I mean, you just have to sort of hear from some of his former players who, when they've moved on, they seem to still stay in contact with Thomas Frank. He seems to develop quite a strong relationship with the players. You're right. On the one hand, with Harry Redknapp's comment, you do often get these sort of farewell messages and they move on to the next guy. But I seem to be of the impression that there was quite a strong relationship between Ange and the players, more so than your average manager. But that doesn't mean to say that as soon as you say, the king is dead, long live the king, as soon as the new manager comes in, they don't turn their attention. Like we all would in any job, you sort of, if someone moves on, yes, they might be someone that you have a warm affection to, but they've all got jobs to do, and they sort of turn their attention to the future. The fact that Thomas Frank is, by all accounts, a lovely guy, and as Daniel Levy says, a superhuman being, will probably make that transition easier, and it will make it easier for fans who are conflicted or frustrated by the decision to change manager, easier to swallow, particularly once they start hearing him speak and seeing him in post-match TV interviews in particular. I mean, even though I think Ange spoke so well at times to us, particularly the written press and in his press conferences, you know, in the immediate aftermath of matches, yourself have often pointed out, and many fans have pointed out, how he could be a bit grumpy. I don't think we'll really see that with Thomas Frank, so that might be a bit of a change that people might welcome. But I mean, you know, Thomas obviously pointed out so many of his strengths. And whilst, you know, I've said before that I felt that Ange Postecoglou deserved a chance to stay on, now, once they decided to make a change, I was thinking of the mind that Thomas Frank was a great appointment. I mean, he really deserves it. He's done such fantastic work at Brentford, of which many points Tom's already pointed out. But the one that really stands out and has been referenced by both the statement when they appointed Thomas Frank, but also Vinay Venkatesham's brief interview with Daniel Levy, is what a master player developer he is. And that seems to be a real USP of his that's attracted Tottenham. And you only have to go through so many of his players. Obviously, you know, David Raya, Mikael Damsgaard, Ezri Konsa, but it's really the forwards, isn't it, that really catch your eye. Ivan Toney, obviously, you know, was playing for Peterborough, now he plays for England. Brian Mbeumo, we all know about, and the fact that Spurs would love to sign him, you know, sums that up. But I think Ollie Watkins in particular, when you look at someone like Matisse Tell, who's obviously signed permanently, that's someone that... If I were a Spurs fan, or if I were Matisse Tell, I'd be looking at the way he developed Watkins from a winger into a centre forward that turned into one of the most, you know, dangerous centre forwards in the Premier League over the last couple of years. Thomas Frank had a huge part to play in that, and I think that's a real big part of his appeal is that side of his management.
Yeah, I think he does tick an awful lot of boxes. And I'm glad you've mentioned Vinay Venkatesham, who, of course, is the new chief executive officer. And Tommy, you know, straight away, and we have been calling for this on the Tottenham Way podcast for a very long time, straight away, some really positive PR. He sits down with Daniel Levy, who announces immediately that he's not satisfied with winning the Europa League. He won't be satisfied until Tottenham have won the Champions League and the Premier League. It all sounds great. Of course, the next couple of months are going to be really significant now in terms of what Spurs do in the transfer market. But, I mean, what have you made of the new chief exec? Do you genuinely believe now that we are going to see Tottenham buying big and actually looking to achieve what Daniel Levy has said he wants them to achieve over the next couple of seasons or so?
I don't know. And I don't think anyone can say that with much confidence, I have to say, after 24 years. I don't think anyone can really be entirely convinced that there's going to be some sort of, you know, switch flipped this summer and it's going to be a completely new strategy. I doubt that will be the case. But I do think there were some small wins here, you know, in just in the fact that Levy was talking on camera, you know, seemingly quite informally. You know, I mean, I know this was probably very much choreographed and thought out about what they would and wouldn't say. But equally, I thought it was a very worthwhile exercise. You know, it was much needed. You know, I think the fans have been wanting to hear from Levy, you know, I mean, in terms of the statement, clearly that no show, I think, was maybe a misjudgment. You know, I think that they were trying to take the kind of personal nature out of it, trying to basically make out as if it wasn't Levy's, you know, personal decision to sack Ange. But even if that is the case, you know, everyone knows he's the chairman, he's the top dog. that these decisions ultimately, you know, he is the one who's accountable. And I think he probably should have put his name on the sheet there. So I think, you know, we needed to hear from him, you know, and I think we know that Vinay coming in has been part of this sort of off-field shakeup, which has been the wish, let's say, of those very high up the club. And part of that is not just his sort of day-to-day operations. And it was interesting that he said he would be in charge of the day-to-day operations at the club as opposed to Levy, but also to kind of, you know, improve the relationship with the fans, to be a more transparent public figure. He's clearly a smooth talker. He's clearly a good talker. I think he'll do very well. He said he's going to meet the supporters trust in the next couple of weeks, I think. And I think those meetings will hopefully be worthwhile. You know, at Arsenal, for example, he did some really good work with the sort of connections with the supporters and improving those really important relationships. Whether or not this translates into something more sort of tangible and meaningful in terms of things like transfer spending, improving the investment on wages, for example, which we know is the lowest in the Premier League when it comes to, you know, in proportion to the revenue, I'm not sure. But I think we don't necessarily need to sort of, you know, set such high standards and then say everything else is a failure. You know, I think here we have long criticised Tottenham, and Ange Postecoglou also criticised, I think, the club for not defending itself enough. So I think this is a start, is basically what I'm saying. And I think, you know, perhaps, you know, if we're trying to sort of read a bit more into it, I thought we saw some signs of a bit of a bromance, you know, like a good relationship between the two. I felt like looking into it, it felt like there was a slight vibe there where Vinay saw Daniel Levy as someone he could be honest with. That he thinks he can sort of, you know, check some of the sort of slightly rougher edges, maybe, that he said they complemented each other's weaknesses and strengths very well. The red wine thing for me was a little bit slightly sort of cringy, you know, the suits in the boardroom, you know, chuckling over red wine. I'm not sure that's, you know, quite the right sort of image you give in these sort of things. But listen, let's forgive them for that. You know, if we want it to be sort of spontaneous and natural, in inverted commas, then we also, you know, we can't say that every single thing needs to be completely pitch perfect. But, you know, I think overall it's encouraging, isn't it? Right. And listen, there is a lot of PR in there, you know, no doubt. Daniel Levy sort of really emphasizing how much the Europa League win meant to him, the seven horrific minutes, all this kind of thing. You know, of course, the aim is to portray him as someone who cares about the trophies, who feels it like the fans, you know, who is one of them, et cetera, et cetera. But I think just because you sort of see through the intention doesn't necessarily mean you have to sort of think it's all completely superficial. I think it was a good idea, and I think generally I thought it was quite well done.
Yeah, listen, I don't want to immediately be cynical, but I'll go back to what I said a bit earlier, Tom B. This sounds great, but if we get to the end of the summer transfer window and Spurs have essentially bought two or three very promising young players from Championship clubs again and are not busting that wage structure of theirs, then the cynicism will very quickly step in, I think, with the majority of supporters. So, you know, people want names now straight away. I read yesterday, we're not interested in Jack Grealish. I'm a massive Grealish fan. I know a lot of people think he would not be a good signing. But a couple of big names now have to arrive, don't they, to back up this feel-good factor, to get everyone believing that Tottenham can compete on more than one front. So have we got any names swirling around? You boys are close to the ground there. Who can we get excited about at this stage of the summer?
I mean, if you can get Brian Mbeumo over the line, I think that would be a really good, really good start. But the thing is, despite these statements, I'm not really sure there's going to be a massive change from what we've seen from before. I don't think, I mean, Spurs, I feel like, have been looking for investment for a while, and that, I think that remains the case. They obviously got in the Champions League, so that will come with extra revenue. But I don't know. I think if you're sort of hoping for a sort of lavish transfer splurge this summer, I'm sure you are. We were Wolf fans, always are, aren't they? But I don't know if you'll that was what will end up being delivered. I mean, there are a few players that might need to be moved on. And so that might open up some extra space. And I'm sure Thomas Frank wants to make his own imprint on it. But I can't imagine there's going to be a massive departure from the way they've been going about things in the last few years, personally. I mean, Daniel Levy has said he wants to win the Premier League or needs to win the Premier League and wants to win the Champions League, but there isn't really any kind of date on when that's actually going is expected to happen. But I could understand if you put yourself out there and make a statement like that off the back of a season where you finish 17th and you've kind of effectively, obviously he said how much it meant to win the Europa League, but on the other hand, he kind of didn't dismiss it, but he said it wasn't enough. I suppose in explaining his thinking behind why making a change as of manager, but you're there also, you're also going to be held to those standards and fans are going to instantly look at, you know, what might be required to achieve those things. And obviously investment in the playing squad is going to be necessary to make that happen. But, you know, Jack Grealish, for example, the matter of his £300,000 a week wages hasn't gone away. It's not like suddenly Daniel Levy says that statement and therefore they can suddenly open the purse strings on that. I just don't see that one happening for that reason, unless a really good deal came up, which is probably what end up happening with Grealish, I suppose, wherever he goes, is that, you know, the likes of a Newcastle are probably not going to pay those kind of wages. A City are probably going to have to pick up some of the tab just to use him as an example. But I don't know about you, Tom, maybe you're hearing differently. But I can't imagine there's suddenly going to be, you know, £250 million worth of players being signed come the end of in the summer, just off the back of that statement, the fact they've got a new manager.
No, I don't think so. I'd be surprised if there was. And I mean, some fans might disagree with this, but I actually think Tottenham's squad is pretty good. Like, I don't see this as a squad that needs completely to be, you know, wholesale changes, sell seven players, bring in seven players, you know, completely new starting lineup. But that's not really where I see this Spurs team at. You know, I think part of the reason that Ange, you know, maybe some people were less convinced about him was, I think you look at the team and actually you think they should be doing better than they were. You know, there are so many players there, young players, yes, but also, you know, some players in the mid-20s, I think, who there's a real significant upside there. You know, and I think, yes, of course, we know they need two or three players at least, you know, up front. I think they need a winger. They definitely need a defensive midfielder. I think they need cover and defence, you know, and I think most people would say that. And then, of course, you need to bolster the depth. You know, that's the other thing. They need probably three or four more players who can offer them good rotations, you know, and prevent another injury crisis. Because, you know, the fixture list came out today and you look at it and you think, you know, when you combine those hard games in January, February with the FA Cup, possible Carabao Cup semi-finals, Champions League playoffs, all this kind of thing, you very quickly realise that the schedule is not going to be kind to Spurs this season. So they really have to have a squad that has more depth, plus maybe one or two players who really improve the starting 11. That said, I don't think it needs a 250 million, upheaval. I don't think necessarily it's in that situation. What I do think is also a point to make here about the, you know, Daniel Vinay Lovin is that so many people say about Levy that one of his biggest weaknesses is, you know, he hasn't shown himself to be a particularly skillful judgment of character or judgment of talent, at least not on the field, but off the field, that there have been so many people around him who, you know, who are essentially sort of, you know, yes people who will nod their head and do as he says, and good sort of financial business people, but not necessarily smart football executives. And, you know, you look at Spurs, you know, this was pointed out to me that I hadn't realized, you know, you look at how many really talented football brains Spurs have had in the last 20 years and who they have let go. You know, look at Michael Edwards, you know, the guy behind the sort of Liverpool revolution under Jurgen Klopp, now their chief executive, was the sporting director, was an analyst at Tottenham, you know, under Harry Redknapp. Maybe could have been promoted and done that job at Spurs. You look at Paul Barber, you know, now the chief executive at Brighton, very much considered to be perhaps the best chief executive in the league, was also at Spurs in the early days under Levy. John McDermott, technical director at England, now basically the sort of the brains behind England football, to be honest, off the pitch, was the academy chief with Pochettino at Tottenham. Could he have been promoted to sort of be the kind of, you know, chief football officer or whatever? They've had these guys in the building and Daniel Levy hasn't spotted them. I think Vinay, for the first time, at least, you know, in a while, maybe you'd say Paratici put him in that bracket as well, is someone who I think is probably, you know, one of the better executives in his field, who is now, you know, at Hotspur Way in the building doing that work. So yes, it's about spending, of course. Yes, it's about transfers and wages. But I also think there's a little mini step here, and I wouldn't go overboard, but there's a mini step here in the right direction when it comes to surrounding Levy with the right kind of people who can take the club forward.
Yeah, I agree with all that. But just looking back at looking at the team and where they need improvement, I'm kind of with you in that it's not so much little tweaks, quite big tweaks. I feel like a couple of big players. This is what I said last summer when Ange sort of shot me down saying there was a lot more needed. And maybe he was right, particularly with the Champions League coming. But their squad is actually now quite big. And I feel like it's a few players that they really could do with it. And what I like about Thomas Frank and what I'm expecting, although you can only really judge him on what he's done so far, but that's not to say that he might not do things quite differently. A lot of people talked about Brentford being quite direct. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the case at Spurs. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I like the way he mixes it up formation-wise, and that might mean that certain players who we've kind of, not dismissed, but kind of seen as squad players perhaps, or ones that you can't rely on as much, might suddenly come into the fold. So I'm thinking someone like, once he's back from his ACL injury, Radu Dragosin never really felt like he really fitted in to Ange's style of play. His best performances were when they were really up against, backs against the wall, which is, despite that being the way that Ange won the Europa League when Dragosin was injured, but that wasn't really how he ideally wanted to play. But I actually think he might suit a back three quite well, Dragosin. I think he played that way at Genoa. And if Thomas Frank is to use what he did at Brentford, he may every so often play like that. So obviously a lot of this is dependent on Romero staying, but someone like him could come into a back three and do quite well. I'm thinking someone like Archie Gray, because when you look at the way Brentford played last season, their most sort of regular team was kind of a 4-2-3-1. And their holding midfielder, is it the Ukrainian one? I've forgotten his name now, right at the right time. But he often sort of dropped back into the left-back position when Lewis Potter, who was playing left-back, really is a winger and a right-footed winger, would bomb on further forward. So I wonder if someone like Archie Gray, given his sort of versatility and adaptability, might fit that system quite well. And obviously, he's got a lot of potential and growth. And it was interesting when then they did that video when they talked about Frank's ability to develop players. They cut to Bergvall, they cut to Tell, and they cut to Gray. So they clearly see him as having massive upside. And Gray and Johnson were two players that Brentford came very close to signing. So presumably Frank is a big fan of them. You know, Johnson is another one who, despite having a really good goals return last season and scoring the winner in the final, I still feel like we haven't quite seen the best of him yet. I feel like there could be another level to go. And part of me wonders if that might even be on the left side rather than the right side cutting in. And maybe that might be something we see with Frank. I do really feel like someone like Mbeumo, for the way Brentford played and way that we presume Spurs will want to play with this rapid counter-attack, could be a pretty transformational signing if they can get him. Because you look at the options that Spurs have, and apart from Johnson, they don't really have electric pace anymore. Sonny's not as quick as he was. Well, I guess we'll come on to him and whether we think he's going to stay or not. But there's big question marks whether he'll still be here. Kulusevski's obviously injured at the moment, but even though I think he could fit the team quite well and is a talented player, he's not rapid either. I think suddenly someone like an Mbeumo could actually be almost the catalyst to making this front three really, really explosive and really work. So it's like you say, it's a few players that they really could sort of locate rather than, I think, sort of wholesale changes, personally.
Yeah, actually, you know, you guys have convinced me. I take your point because I'm thinking back towards the end of last season and believing that we only really had 11 players when we had our best 11 out. We were winning matches and doing it with Ange Ball, not Ange Ball. The moment we lost Romero, Van de Ven at the back in particular, we struggled, and that might be the case. And I think, you know, for me, what's really interesting is will Romero go? What's going to happen to Richarlison? You know, these are key issues that Thomas Frank's going to have to deal with straight away. But someone like a Bissouma, I mean, it's amazing how his season ended, and yet he was completely out in the cold. And I feel that maybe under Frank, he could be an outstanding player again. So it's fascinating. You've mentioned one name there, though, Tom B. And by the way, you also, Tom A, mentioned the fixtures. And just before we go, I'm throwing this at the guys, but I'm going to ask you to predict how many points Spurs will pick up in August and September. So have a quick look at those opening fixtures. Sonny, is he going to go in the summer? Should he go in the summer? Should that night in Bilbao be the perfect way for us to remember him? Tom A?
It's always difficult with these sort of decisions, isn't it? Because I think, you know, in the ideal world, you keep Son until he's 38, you know, and he retires at Tottenham and, you know, everyone, you keep him at the club because he's been such a hero and because of what he'll contribute to the dressing room. And to be honest, you know, maybe he can do it off the bench as well. And I think that, to be honest, I think that was the club's idea. I think they wanted him to extend his deal last season when they were in talks with him. They wanted to announce a sort of triggering of the extension, but then also, you know, an extra couple of years on top. And for whatever reason, they couldn't reach an agreement on that. You know, and you might say that perhaps, you know, maybe Son had his doubts during what was obviously a pretty chaotic season last year. And so obviously, you know, in January, I think it was, they had to announce the extension of the 1 year because otherwise he could leave for free this summer. And I guess they're now in that position that they were in with Harry Kane, where Levy basically, in the end, decided that, look, Kane has said he's happy to stay for one more year, but he's not giving any guarantees that he's going to sign a new contract. And I think Son is probably in a similar position where he's got one more year. He could leave next year for free. There's no guarantees he'll sign a new deal. And so do you take the sort of 30 million, 40 million this summer from possibly Saudi Arabia, for example, and you make what is obviously a sort of a tough decision, but one that is probably financially prudent. And I think, all things considered, when you look at what Son's form has been like over the last year or two, I think that probably could be the smart call. But, you know, I don't say that with a huge amount of conviction. I was one of the people who said that Liverpool should sell Mohamed Salah, you know, like about 18 months ago when he was kind of kicking up a fuss under Klopp and his form was, you know, falling off a cliff. I sort of thought, well, you know, take the 50 million now and rebuild the team. And, you know, he basically won them the league last season. So, who knows, under a new coach, under Thomas Frank, perhaps Son, you know, suddenly has a huge revival. And I do remember Ange saying last season, and perhaps he had his own reasons for this, but he did say, you know, that someone like Sonny, you know, the older players, he said, they basically fall off a cliff. At one point, they just suddenly lose it and that's it. And he said, if you look at all the data and the statistics around Sonny, there's no suggestion that we're seeing that, you know, that actually his data and his stats physically, technically, were all still pretty good. And perhaps, you know, there were other reasons for his form dipping last season. So I guess, you know, I'm very much sitting on the fence there. I think if it was probably my call, I think I would probably take the money at this point. And maybe you just have to stomach the fact that he might be good for another year or two. Ultimately, that is sometimes what happens. You know, you look at the best sellers in the world, Real Madrid, for example, let's say, you know, they sold Casemiro for 70 odd million. Yeah, he had one good season for Man United. And you say, okay, we accept that because we, you know, we took the 70 million at just about the right time, and maybe Spurs should now think about doing that with Son. But, you know, I also, if I reserve the right to be wrong if he scores 25 goals under Thomas Frank this season, let's say that.
Well, before I get Tom B's thoughts on this, I mean, this is why I'm not a businessman, but I would like to think that they go to Sonny and say, what do you want to do? You've been amazing for a number of years. Do you now want to go and play in Saudi Arabia or whatever it is, and we'll cash in on you? Or do you want to be not the key man necessarily under the new manager, but still have a big part to play in perhaps the start of a really exciting era? That's my heart speaking. I'm sure that hard-nosed football clubs can't really operate like that. But Tom B, I would like to feel as though Sonny is able really to state what he wants to do at this stage.
I think there will be some element of that, but I don't think Spurs will let him go on the cheap, because he is quite unique in a lot of ways of the sort of commercial revenue he brings in. You hear sort of different things about regarding Son. There's obviously 12 months left, so as Tom points out, it'd be a free transfer in a while, but because of those commercial interests, I've also heard, you know, it would take silly money to get him. I think, well, first of all, it's probably very unlikely that he goes before the tour of South Korea at the start of August. Not only because, as all clubs are, they're commercially contracted to play their big players in these games, and that will be the same with Son. Not to say that he couldn't be sold before then, but they would be sort of impacted financially if he didn't play. But just the fact that they're there, he's obviously the icon. I would see it probably more likely if it was to happen after that. I'm led to believe that he would be open to moving. I think he sees the merits in going out on the massive high that was winning a trophy at the end of a decade. I wonder what he thinks of his own game. Most players back themselves. But it was a difficult season, even if the data didn't really sort of back that suggestion up. I just watching him regularly, I just didn't feel like he had the same impact. And I do feel like age was kind of catching up to him, but albeit in a difficult season. So personally, I think maybe this is the right time if they get the right offer to sort of sail into the sunset, no pun intended, and maybe move on and build a statue perhaps later, because he won a trophy and he was the captain and he was brilliant and he is brilliant. But yeah, that's personally, I think it could be the right time and the right transfer for everyone.
I mean, it does speak to one of the challenges, I think, for Frank, which is, you know, it's natural, I think, when you have a manager who leaves, like Ange, but generally, to be honest, any manager who leaves any kind of impact, that players sort of think that this feels like the right time to leave, you know. And I think obviously Kane left just before Ange, before Ange's first game, so he also left in that kind of like transition there. We're seeing at Liverpool that happened, obviously, you know, and Klopp left, and even more so now, you know, this season. I think that players often sort of think, it's not so much like, can I be bothered to kind of go through a whole new manager and a new transition and new speeches and the new ways and the new tactics and everything. But I think they just sort of psychologically feel like maybe this is a good moment, you know. And I think that is something that Frank is going to have to address and fix straight away. You know, that it's not necessarily a matter of, you know, the whole change room were really behind Ange, because we know that wasn't the case, despite, you know, all the soppy social media messages. But I do think he needs to get buy-in, you know, pretty quickly. I always think that's the case with a manager, maybe, where one of the kind of doubts about Frank, unlike Mourinho, say, unlike Conte, is he can't just hold up his CV in the change room and say, look what I've won, you need to listen to me, and everyone kind of listens straight away. He has to sort of convince them that he is a manager good enough to manage, you know, a big Premier League club like Spurs. And the only way he can do that is through his messaging, through his charisma, through his coaching, obviously, but also, to be honest, just flatly through results, you know, in the first kind of few months. If that, you know, Frank does have this slightly unfortunate history, like, to be honest, Postecoglou had, that he has, you know, has had difficult starts at the clubs where he's been. And I think particularly given, you know, looking at the fixture list that Spurs have, which looks like it's pretty kind in the early weeks, he could really do with some momentum, because in a way, that was what Postecoglou never really got last season. You know, they had actually a fairly sort of okay-ish start, but then they just were always kind of chasing their tail the whole time once the injury started. And I think Frank could really just do with a positive start to get the fans on side, all those kind of ones who are the Postecoglou loyalists. He needs to wing them round quickly, and also get the players on side, you know, to get those kind of senior members who maybe are having some doubts themselves about whether they want to stay at Spurs, whether this project's going to work. He needs to convince them pretty quickly too.
Yeah. Well, in the next edition of the Tottenham Way podcast, we are going to try and identify, I think we're going to have three options each, the three key ingredients that Frank is going to have to bring to the job. And just to tease one for me, it's obviously, you know, dealing with Daniel and sorting out the wage issue. But we'll try and identify between...
Not three, Marcus. It has to be 10. You know, to have Vinay's 10 key characteristics to make a successful Tottenham manager.
Well, we'll get 9 if we have 3 each, and then we'll try and shovel one cumulative one between us. Thomas Frank is going to give some interesting comments, I think, imminently. So Tom Barkley in particular is going to have to go. So a very quick last one, boys, and then we'll get back, I think, before the end of the week and assess what Frank's had to say, and of course come up with these 10 key messages that he's going to have to find. But looking at those fixtures in August and September, it's Burnley at home, Manchester City away. Always think it's good to play City right at the start of a season. Bournemouth at home, West Ham away, Brighton at home, and Tottenham. Sorry, Brighton away and Tottenham against Wolves at home. I'm getting confused as to which team's which. So 6 games. So I'll say it again. That was stupid. Burnley at home, City away, Bournemouth at home, West Ham away, Brighton away, Wolves at home. I am saying we'll pick up 13 points from those opening games. Higher or lower, Tom Barkley?
Well, I see you've skipped over the absolute battering that Spurs are going to have up against PSG in the Super Cup, but obviously it doesn't really matter.
We're winning that comfortably. Come on. Thomas Frank always wins a trophy with his first game.
Well, that's true, but PSG are are somewhat different level. But I mean, look, Spurs managers normally start well. We had that with Ange. We had it with Conte, I think. I mean, generally, Nuno. So I fully expect, you know, Spurs might well be top of the league again after a few games, and everyone will be thinking this is where it goes. So I've learned from that experience not to get too carried away. But you look at it, I think Burnley at home, they, you know, there's every reason for them to win that game against Scott Parker. I still think they'll lose at City. What's it? Did you say 13?
Yeah, I'll tell you how I've got my 13 points. We beat Burnley, 3 points. We get a point at City, that makes 4. We beat Bournemouth, that makes 7. We win at West Ham, that makes 10. We lose at Brighton, but then we beat Wolves. So that's how I get my 13 points.
Okay.
I can caveat that by saying that possibly we lose at City, right, but get a point at Brighton, you know, one or the other.
I'm going to wrap this up because I've got to go and do this Thomas Frank interview. But I will say win against Burnley, lose against City, draw against Bournemouth because they're better than you think. West Ham, win away at West Ham. Draw at Brighton, beat Wolves. So is that more?
Yeah, we're about the same. I think we're about the same.
Anyway, I'm going to wrap it
just
up.
Leaves, anyway. All right, cheers, Tom B. And we'll speak to you again later in the week. And that leaves our chief optimist, Tom Allnut, to tell us that we are going to win perhaps all our matches in August and September. I don't know.
I think they'll have a good start. I agree. I think they'll have a good start. It's, you know, I don't know if I'm jinxing it, but I think, yeah, I look at the list and I actually think it's a really good fixture list to have. You know, if I sort of think, what would Frank have wanted? He would have wanted a sort of kind-ish start, you know, and that's not to say Bournemouth and Brighton and West Ham away are easy games. They're not. But I do think there's games there that you can win. And what will also be really interesting, Manchester City away in the second game, to what extent will we see Frank sort of deploy the kind of Brentford low block in that match? It'll be a kind of a really good early litmus test to see what matches he thinks he should kind of pivot towards the kind of Frank defensive model, as it were, because we know that, you know, part of his strength is that he likes to, with Brentford, he liked to play three at the back against the bigger teams, something he found very difficult to play against when they were one of the dominant sides in the Championship. He liked to sort of play a midfield three in those games as well, and basically accept that they wouldn't necessarily have all the ball, they wouldn't necessarily press quite as high, that essentially, you know, they would be, let's say, more pragmatic, you know. And I think there is a question mark here. In what games does he carry that across from Brentford to Spurs? Because we know that Spurs, you know, they want their coaches to be more front foot. You know, they can't do that against, you know, all of the top 10 teams in the league, for example. Yet you would think that Manchester City away is a prime candidate for that kind of approach. So it'll be really interesting to see what lineup and what system he picks in that match. That said, I just wanted to add that, you know, that Frank has been so open when he was at Brentford about his kind of tactics. And, you know, there are endless sort of videos and articles written by the players about that, how they adapted and how they kind of added, in his words, the layers to the sort of Brentford approach as they progressed in the Premier League. And I thought what was always interesting is that whilst he is flexible and whilst he is adaptable, I always think his first instinct is to be positive, you know, and I think that is something that Spurs can be really optimistic about. And I'm sure they 100% noticed it in all their research that, for example, you know, one thing he always says is that even if they're 1-0 up in the last 10 minutes, if they have a set piece, you know, up against the other team, they still put players forward. They still play the same set piece, basically, they would play if it was 0-0 at the beginning. They don't just put one player up, because he says we always think we can score. We always think the mindset should be that we can score rather than holding on to what we have. And that's quite, you know, that's quite angistic, isn't it? You know, that is that idea of always wanting to score one more. And so I don't think we should get into this idea that Frank is, just because he's flexible and pragmatic, necessarily means that he's always going to be defensive when Tottenham are winning. I think inherently he is a positive coach, you know, and it'll be really, really interesting to see, I think, in those opening tougher games like Manchester City, even Bournemouth. They've got Aston Villa in October, and then it's a difficult November, Chelsea, United, Arsenal, to see what kind of approach he deploys in those matches. But I'm going to be optimistic, Marcus. I think they'll get off to a flyer, and then maybe it'll sort of simmer down December.
Just let's maintain the optimism. Thomas Frank. Thomas Frank is a positive manager. The Tottenham Way podcast is going to be a positive podcast, at least until about October the 4th.
I was thinking we need to change our jingle, don't we? Because it's got sort of the Ange stuff at the beginning, and we need to find some good Frank quotes maybe from this evening that we can get our tech gurus on.
Well, we'll study those and be back towards the end of the week to reflect on what he's had to say, to discuss in more detail the key ingredients, those 10 ingredients that he has got to bring to the job if he's going to be successful. And we can look in a little more detail at who should go, who should stay, and of course, who should come. But for now, Tom Barkley of The Sun, thank you very much indeed. Tom Allnut of The Times, thank you very much indeed. Thanks to all of you. Have a fantastic summer. We will be back very shortly. I'm Marcus Buckland. Come on, you Spurs.